I am Plante on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. We discussed the future of the Liberal Party of Canada now. Its historic low showing in last May's election has elicited much discussion about the party's relevance and its future. I am joined now by Zach Pakin. He is a candidate for National Policy Chair of the Liberal Party of Canada. The party will be in their biennial convention in Ottawa in January 2012. We'll talk to Mr. Pakin about why he's running. He's only 20. Why the Liberal Party, for him, is it still relevant? What can they do to make themselves as prominent as they once were? His website is at votepakin.ca. Please welcome to the Plante on the Line program in Montreal this day, Zach Pakin. Good morning, Mr. Pakin.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Very good. Yourself?
I'm good, thank you.
So you were in Vancouver recently talking to Liberals here. Campaigning for this position as National Policy Chair. Were there a lot of people that attended?
Oh, yeah, actually, we exceeded what we were expecting. Normally, at a convention like this for the Liberal Party of Canada's BC wing, you'd get about 200 people or so to one of the biennial conventions, but we exceeded 350 delegates, so I was actually quite impressed with the turnout.
And that surprised you because, say, the party didn't do so well in the last election, or?
I wouldn't say it surprised me. I say it impressed me because, you know, quite frankly, it shows that despite the results of the last election, there are lots of people out there who are still very proud to be Liberals and who are even more excited now than they were before the election to be Liberals because they can really take part in rebuilding the party and in defining what liberalism is going to mean to Canadians in the 21st century.
Now, your campaign has gotten a lot of attention because you are, as I said in the intro, 20 years old. Why run for this position now?
Well, after the last election, I took a long, hard look as to where I could fit into the party's rebuilding process. And, you know, the 2011 election was a very defining moment to be a Liberal in this country. You either knew you were a Liberal or you didn't. And I knew still very clearly that I did not fit in any other political party and that I was a Liberal and I wanted to take part in the rebuilding process. And I've always been very interested in policy. And I realized very quickly in analyzing our electoral results over the past several elections and what has gone right and what has gone wrong, that in particular, this time around, we've probably only got one chance to get the rebuilding process right, to effect serious change and to move to the next generation. And so I started going around the country, as you were saying before. I've been as far west as Victoria, B.C. I've been as far east as Halifax, Nova Scotia. And I'm talking to more and more Canadians, to more and more Liberals. And what they're telling me are the same three things that keep coming up in what's lacking in our party's policy process. And so I'm running out of a sense of duty to get those three ideas on the table to make sure that the largest number of Liberals can hear them as possible, and to make sure that we can really open up our policy process and engage the Liberal grassroots of our country.
So one of the things that you're running on is simplifying the policy process by creating new forms for developing policy. Has there been a problem in your party with the grassroots not getting involved with, say, the platform at election time and the sort?
You're exactly right. Well, I mean, of course, the policy process in itself is not simply something that comes around every election, every 4 years. It's something that is continuous. Policy has to be working all the time in order to engage Canadians not only during elections but between elections as well. And yes, the policy process that we have in our party is designed in such a way to discourage grassroots Liberals from getting involved. What happens is you start at the local level, at your riding level, and you try to pass a policy there. And then it goes up to the provincial convention every other year or 2 years, depending on your province. And then it goes to the national convention. And all of this is about a 2 to 3 year long process. And after you've worked your butt off to get this policy up the various different levels, even if it passes at a national convention, it's not necessarily included in the party's platform when the election comes around, and it's not necessarily included in the Liberals' day-to-day strategic messaging. So it really discourages people from working really hard to get those policies going. So what I'd like to do, by removing many of these obstacles, and I'm happy to get more into depth if you like, is allowing more Liberals simply to participate with less effort, because a lot of people have great ideas that they want to contribute to the future of Liberalism and the future of our party, but simply don't have the time to put in, you know, the hours and days and weeks and months of hard work to mobilize so many people to get a policy passed at a national convention.
Now, aren't you tying the hands of your leaders, though, or your leader? I mean, if you think about the successful leaders in your party's past, you think of the sort of the big-ticket ideas that Trudeau had in terms of remaking, you know, the social policy in this country. If you have sort of disparate ideas from different ridings, won't that hamper your leader's chance
It's a good question, and then we, of course, will have a vetting process so that not, you know, any radical, you know, ridiculous policy with very little support can go through this entire process. But no, I would disagree with you in the sense that in the past, especially in recent elections, we've selected a leader, often had a coronation of a leader, and the leader's told us what to believe, has told us what our party stands for. And that was never more apparent than it was under Michael Ignatieff. You know, Michael Ignatieff came in, he was, you know, given his coronation out at the Vancouver Biennial Convention of the party in 2009, and he immediately positioned the party at you know, position X on the political spectrum, and told us that this is what our party stood for, even though there were many liberals on a wide variety of issues that were divided. And what it did is it alienated many elements of our party. Now, Michael Ignatieff was always perceived, largely because of his support of the war in Iraq and for strong measures in the war on terror when he was living in the United States, he's perceived as being, you know, center-right. But when he came back to Canada, he planted his flag very clearly in the center-left. And what that did is it alienated both sides of the party. There was the center-left of the party that came out and said, well, this guy's not a real progressive. He's not really center-left. We don't trust him. He's just a conservative in disguise. And there's the center-right that was expecting a center-right leader that ended up, you know, having to deal with policies that included, you know, increases in corporate taxes and the like. And they were very alienated by Michael Ignatieff's, you know, sudden about-face. So I think what's far more important for our party in its rebuilding process is to first decide what it stands for, to allow the grassroots to really decide what the party stands for. And at that point, after that, we can select a leader that reflects those values and not the other way around.
So where for you is the party? I mean, is it a center-left party? Is it more to the left? Or is it sort of the ideas that sort of the conservative party has, but sort of with red paint?
I've never personally viewed the Liberal Party as being a party of the left or a party of the right. I don't think that it necessarily has to fit in on the spectrum anywhere. I think what the Liberal Party is a coalition of the serious, to quote Andrew Coyne's term. It's a party that is capable of achieving pragmatic solutions when necessary and also achieving bold ideas when necessary. If you look at universal health care or at the Charter of Rights and Freedoms or at all the other, you know, great things that our party has accomplished over the course of its history, it's been bold ideas that don't necessarily fit in anyone's spectrum that have allowed us to achieve electoral success. And the way I'd like to see things coming up in the future, especially now that we live in an era where bold ideas alone, unfortunately, don't suffice, and you have to deal with the 24/7 news cycle with the 20-second soundbite with the 140-character tweet, what we've got to start doing is messaging more effectively. And the way I'd like to see the party go is outflank the conservatives on their own issues, because there's certainly room to do that. Outflank the NDP on their own issues, because there's certainly room to do that. And what we'll end up with at that point is a party that is very clearly socially progressive and fiscally responsible. And in addition to those things, we can claim certain issues on the political spectrum and really make them our own. We need to make electoral reform our issue. We need to make the legalization of marijuana our issue. We need to make the environment our issue. There are so many issues that we can claim to ourselves on the political spectrum, but that we've been too afraid to do, seeing as, you know, if we make a slip up here or a slip up there, it could have ruined our chances of forming a government. But now that we're in third place, we can afford to start championing issues on a more regular basis. And as I said, not only do I think we can afford to do so, I think it's essential to our rebuilding process.
One of the ideas that you have in running for this position in your party is setting up a system whereby members can put issues on the table for the caucus, and they can raise that during whenever Parliament's sitting. I think it's an interesting idea. I don't know whether I agree with it or not, but how would that work, essentially? Is that using the Internet?
Well, here's how I suggest the system would work, is that after the next biennial convention, we have another major membership blitz and really start to build our electoral coalition that'll bring us progress in the 2015 election. And after we've done that membership blitz, we have to do a major poll. And this can be done, you know, semi-regularly, or you can just have one to get it started off, and it depends on where the party's going. But we do a major poll on the two or three or four or five major issues that the membership of the party wants the party to champion on a regular basis. So whatever those issues turn out to be, maybe healthcare, environment, economy, you know, whatever, take those top major issues. And then on a regular basis, like weekly, you could do this via email, you could do this via phone, because we need to be able to reach the largest number of Canadians as possible. On a weekly basis, you send out this contact, and Canadians, liberals in particular, can respond by illustrating these issues that we're going to be championing with their own stories, so that, you know, a certain liberal MP or the appropriate liberal critic for the issue in question can get up in the House either during question period or during any speech from the floor and say, Liberal member X, who lives in city Y and province Z, has this story about how this, issue affected him, and that's why the Liberal Party is championing this cause. And so what this would do is really turn the Liberal Party into the party of the people. It shows that it's a political movement that's gaining more and more and more and more momentum, and I think that's essential.
At this convention in January, will you be selecting a new leader?
No, we won't. The leadership convention has been postponed to sometime between March and June of 2013.
I see. So Mr. Ray will be in there until then, is that correct?
That's right. Mr. Ray has given every intention that he will be the interim leader until 2013.
Yeah. Are there any people that you're hearing that are seriously thinking of running in 13? Or is that too soon?
Too far away, I should say. What I'm really glad about is that the entire membership of the party has very much, almost unanimously agreed that we don't need a leadership convention right now, and I think that that's very much reflected in caucus. Right now, there's no jockeying around. We need to put the party first. We need to figure out what we stand for as a party. We need to figure out how we can best rebuild and modernize our party for the 21st century. Excuse me. And we need to put that ahead of any other leadership ambitions that we have. And so I really don't see people going around talking on a regular basis about who's going to be the leader. And anybody who does start talking all the time about what's going to happen in 2013 is doing the party a disservice, because we shouldn't be focusing on that right now.
Now, who else is running for this position, this national policy chair position? Are there other candidates?
Yes, there are. There are four other candidates. Nomination has just closed about a week ago or so. And we've got four other candidates. Two are from British Columbia, actually, and two are from Ontario.
And looking at your website, you have a big list of endorsers, of people that have endorsed your campaign already, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Are you happy with the reception that you're getting? I mean, there are people that are commenting that you're probably too young, you have little life experience.
Well, you know, I'd like to challenge them on that. I've actually got several years' experience of working at think tanks in Washington and non-resident experiences from Canada. I've got experience quite a bit in the media, and personally having my own column and being an editor at a multimedia journal internationally, and several years' experience in our party, either pushing policy or doing grassroots organization. So I reject the allegation that I don't have any experience. And furthermore, out of the five candidates who are running for national policy chair, three are below the age of 25. I think that now is not a time to be rejecting people simply because they're young. If anything, we need to embrace the next generation if we're going to be able to rebuild effectively. And when you've got people like former Ontario Deputy Premier George Smitherman or former Ontario Premier David Peterson who have come out in favor of my campaign, I think it starts to show that there's a growing consensus that, you know, we need a new generation of leaders in this party.
How much responsibility are you willing to assign to your previous leaders, Mr. Ignatieff, Mr. Dion, maybe Mr. Martin, with regards to where the party is today?
They're not, exclusively to blame, but definitely there is blame that goes upon them. There are many leaders who have decided to put their own personal ambitions first, and political infighting in our party has certainly destroyed us a lot. And it's not simply political infighting at the leadership position. It's been political infighting, within all levels of the party. Everyone wants their, Peter Newman's been writing about this, everyone wants their little fiefdom within the party. And not to say that we shouldn't have, provincial territorial associations in our party, and not to say that we shouldn't have commissions. I mean, that's up to the membership to decide. But there needs to be a common sense of purpose. People need to get behind a set of ideals and behind an entire team and say, this is what we're going to do. Because that's exactly what the Conservatives do, and that's exactly what the New Democrats do. They have ideas that unite them, and they have a common sense of purpose. And we need to be putting that first as well, because quite frankly, I think that the future of our country, the future of national unity in our country, and of so many different issues and challenges that our country is going to face over the 21st century, can be answered with liberal responses. So we're really fighting for the future of Canada here, and if we want to continue the political infighting in our party, then we're just going to be going the wrong way. We've got to put our party first.
There's also been talk of a merger with the NDP. I'm assuming you're rejecting that. How serious are those talks?
There are no talks right now of merging with the NDP. There is clear consensus within the elites of both parties that are currently in caucus, which are, at the end of the day, the people who are going to negotiate a potential deal if it ever happens, between the NDP and the Liberals. That there's no merger on the table. I mean, remember what happened with the Progressive Conservatives and the Canadian Alliance, and not to say that this is parallel, because the PCs and the Alliance really were the same party under Brian Mulroney, whereas, the Liberals and the NDP are two completely different parties. But even then, in that case, it took three elections and then leadership jockeyings after the 2000 election before we actually saw a merger take place. There was serious resistance. Both parties needed to realize, finally, and it took them a long time, to realize that neither of them would be capable to form an election, to win an election, rather, on their own. And I'm very sure that there are lots and lots of people within the Liberals and within the NDP who think that they're capable of winning an election at some point down the road, either the next election or at some election, you know, some point down the road. And the majority of the membership of both parties is still very much opposed to a merger. So I don't see that on the horizon anytime soon.
Now, last May's election, as I mentioned off the top, was a historic low for your party. And looking at previous elections, it doesn't look like it was unexpected. How do you stem the tide, I guess, your party's fortunes are declining?
Well, you know, I mean, Peter Newman's been writing a lot this week, and it's not been positive about the Liberal Party, saying that we're losing roughly 30 seats every election, and if we lose 30 more in the next election, we'll have just enough for a game of bridge. But, excuse me, I don't think that it's necessarily a constant downfall. Parties do have bad elections, and, you know, we've not been connecting enough with the Canadian people in terms of how we're able to succeed. The way I interpret, the results of the last election were not an embrace of the Conservative Party. I don't think that Stephen Harper's inspired that many Canadians. I mean, we're talking about a guy who rules through the politics of fear here, not the politics of hope. I think what we're seeing was a clear rejection of both the Liberals and the Bloc during the last election. Remember, people don't vote governments in, they vote them out. And so everyone wants to always look to an alternative to the government when an election comes along. And Canadians looked to the Liberal Party first, and they didn't like what they saw for a wide variety of reasons. So we've got to get better at so many different things if we're going to be able to do that. We've got to be more honest. We've got to be more upfront with Canadians and have clear values that we're able to articulate. Messaging is just going to be key. If you looked at the last election, I think we actually had a great platform with some very constructive ideas about how we could move the country forward, ways that we could invest in Canadian families without increasing taxes on the average Canadian, the family five-pack. I thought it was great policy. The only problem is we didn't run on that policy. We were all over the place. We were talking about the family five-pack sometimes about how Harper might cut health care funding, sometimes about Harper's contempt of Parliament or about the prorogation or about mismanagement of the economy or this or that, and it was literally all over the place. They adjust the jails and the corporate taxes. There was no concrete message. We ran on our brand, and not only is our brand tarnished in different parts of the country, but a brand alone is not enough to win an election anymore, that we live in the era of the 140-character tweet and the 20-second soundbite. And so what we've got to do is embrace messaging more effectively. And I looked very clearly at the Conservative message in the last election, and so many Canadians did. And the message was very clear. And they repeated it over and over and over again, and it resonated with the Canadian public. That message was, you have two choices. You either give us a strong, stable, national, Conservative majority government, or we'll end up with a reckless coalition of left-wing parties that will bankrupt the economy and ruin our fragile recovery. It's that simple. He appealed to Canadians on the economy, and the other parties did not do so consistently, and he did so on a consistent message. And we just were not able to do that. So if we're going to be able to win, we've got to modernize our party and really do it with a common sense of purpose, learn how to message and to micro-target effectively.
Now, I read somewhere you gave an interview to another publication, and it said there that making an impact on Canada's national political scene was a goal of yours, a dream of yours. I picked up your dad's book, The Life, and in the acknowledgments, he says that the three Pakin kids at the time, I guess you and your two brothers, you'd all make good premiers or prime ministers. Is that still the goal for you?
Well, I'm 20 years old, and right now I'd be very honored if the members of the Liberal Party so choose to be the national policy chair of the Liberal Party, and I would place finishing my studies and beginning a career and starting a family far ahead of any political ambitions that I might have somewhere down the road.
And your family, they're all supporting your endeavors?
My family has been very supportive.
Yeah. That must be, I mean, I guess you learn politics being with your dad, I guess, right? Is that right?
Well, I mean, the dinner table conversations are always very fascinating. So I've been very blessed to grow up in a great family. I've had two great parents, two great step parents who are all four, very intelligent and fascinating people. And I've had two great younger brothers and a wonderful younger sister. And they all have just such an incredible positive outlook on the world. And they've had a profound impact on the way that I view my country and how I want to affect it.
We've had your dad on the show a number of times, and he's just been such a great guest. Zach, good luck with your campaign, and thanks for your time today.
Thanks very much, Joe.
You're very welcome. VotePakin.ca is the website for more. Zach Pakin on the line from Montreal. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Plunder.